Once upon a time, in a galaxy far, far away, Jason interviewed some pretty cool people. Here's one of those interviews now.
All right, it's Jay Stu, and I'm here with the gorgeous Sarah.
Oh, stop it. Hi.
Hi, we're here at Articon. We're very happy to be standing here with Mr. Mitch Markowitz, and we're here celebrating the 45th anniversary of the hilarious House of Frightenstein.
You got that one right, too.
Oh, yeah. Great. Which is a show we grew up with.
He read the cake,
you
that's
why. You can pick anything off the top shelf now, since you got them both right.
Sweet. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the origin of the show, how it all came together?
Sure. Rumor has it that my brother, my older brother, he's 7 years older than I am, he was, he still is, I guess, sat around in a room, in a hotel room in Toronto with six or seven of his closest and most intimate friends. I think I was on the road at the time with Doug Henning, the single most important magician of his day. They brainstormed and came up with the idea for a kid show with a sort of horror theme to it. And then the party was over, and then we did the hard work, the grunt work, and evolved it from a concept into a television show. And the evolution was a very slow one. It all evolved very slowly. We started off thinking there would be a castle, and it would be scary, and there would be a count, and there would be an Igor, and then as time would go on and things progressed, we thought, let's have a witch, and then let's have a librarian, and let's have this, and let's have that. And it ended up being what it ended up being, which was an hour-long show, 130 episodes of The Hilarious House of Frightenstein. We originally produced the show for CHCH-TV in Hamilton, period. They, in turn, syndicated it across Canada, and then it was syndicated across the United States, and then subsequent to that, it played in Spain, and it played in Australia, and it played in Norway, and so it ended up being all around the world.
Wow.
That's fantastic. And I got to ask you, how did you convince Vincent Price to do the show?
Well, we originally sold the idea of Vincent Price without having Vincent Price. We originally presented the show to CHCH-TV. The general manager at the time was interested. My brother had already done a couple of other shows for CHCH, so we had a relationship. And he was interested. He said, you know what, it sounds like an interesting idea, this pseudo-horror kids TV show. Let me think about it for a week. As soon as we came out of that meeting, we realized we did not close that sale.
Yeah.
So we thought, how can we close the sale? Made another meeting with him a few days later, went in and said, listen, what would you say if we could get a real big-time horror movie star to be the host of the show?
Right.
And the general manager said, Debbie at the time said, well, like who? So just like out of nowhere, my brother went like this and pulled the name Vincent Price out of the air and said, well, you know, like Vincent Price. And Sid just said, listen, if you could get Vincent Price, an internationally famous horror movie icon, to come and be the host of our show on our little station in our little town of Hamilton in Canada, I'd sign up right now for 130 hour-long episodes.
Wow.
So we pulled out a contract. He did sign it.
Oh, my God.
Then all we had to do was go out and get Vincent Price. So we shopped around, found a way to get through to him directly without sort of circumventing an agent and managers and all that other stuff. Got him on the phone, and just basically told him the truth, that the show is going to run in a little town outside of Toronto called Hamilton that nobody's ever heard of.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to see it, so you don't have to worry about it adversely affecting your big-time movie career.
Yeah.
By, oh no, what'd you do this for? Nobody's going to see it.
Oh,
and it's a kid show, and he'd never done a kid show before.
Oh, wow.
And we said we can get you in and out of Toronto or Hamilton in 2 days, which didn't end up being true, but that's what we thought we were going to do, and we'll pay you.
Well, they had an influence.
So it didn't take him very long to think about it. It was just never done a kid show, hadn't really worked in Canada much.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he could get in and out of do the show in 2 days, he worked it around his filming schedule. So he said yes. Vincent Price said yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Now, he actually came to Hamilton to shoot those.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Came here, and we started off saying, like I said, we'll do it all in 2 days. We got him out onto the set. He stood on what looked like a balcony, and my brother and I produced the show. I did a little cameo on all 130 episodes, the super hippie character.
Yeah.
But when we were doing the Vincent Price bits, my job then was I was lying on the ground beneath what looked like a balcony. He was standing on the balcony, and the plan was I was going to hand him out up whatever prop or outfit I thought was appropriate for the next bit.
Right.
So we got through about 15 minutes worth of taping. My brother was in the booth directing at the time.
Okay.
And CH didn't have a real directing booth there at the time.
Yeah.
So it was built in inside of a school bus, which was parked in the parking lot. So Riff, my brother, got on the PA system, and after about 15 minutes worth of shooting, and said, "Vincent, Mitch, we have to have a meeting." Came running out onto the set.
Yeah.
We all huddled together like the three of us are now.
Yeah.
And he looked Vincent in the eye and said, "Vincent, you're just not scary. We hired you to come here and be scary." So Vincent Price looked him back in the eye and said, "Well, Riff, the stuff you wrote wasn't scary.
Right.
I mean, it was cute, it all rhymed, but
yeah.
It ain't scary. I'm not a magician." So we said, "Okay, go back to your hotel room."
Yeah.
We called the two writers in that were writing all the Vincent Price stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in a big mansion in Toronto at the time and had an indoor pool and lots and lots of rooms, so the writers were all in all those rooms.
Yeah.
We said to those guys, "You got to rewrite all 400 little bits of Vincent Price's. They have to be scary, and you got to do it right now. So, and you're going to do it in that room over there." So they went into the room. We locked the door, and we said, "No bathroom and no food until it's done." And about 24 hours later, there was three big knocks on the door. That was two. There's the third one. And we opened the door and let him out. First, they ran to the bathroom. Then we gave him sandwiches. We took the material, vetted it, and it was scary.
Oh, wow.
We took it in the next day to the set. Vincent Price read it and added that special cachet that only Vincent Price had. And the rest was history. 45 years later, people that were celebrating the show's 45th anniversary,
yep.
People around the world are still enjoying it.
Yep.
And he made it scary. I mean, he took scary and made it special.
Right.
A longer answer than you probably were looking for.
That's
but
right.
Yeah, no, that's... And actually, that was my first introduction to Vincent Price, was on the hilarious Frankenstein.
Yeah,
it was, and I fell in love with him instantly from those little bits.
Yeah.
Now, shooting the episodes, because Billy Van did a lot of the characters.
Didn't start off that way.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
We didn't... Billy wasn't even in the picture.
Wow.
What we thought we were going to do, we were shooting for what you call in the industry a sight gag. In other words, you look at it and it's funny.
Yeah.
So we thought that the best way to have a sight gag in this castle was we would hire the biggest, fattest person we could find in the world to be the assistant, Igor.
Right.
And we would hire the smallest person we could find in the world to be the count.
Right.
So we went looking in those days, in the 70s, it was referred to as a midget or a dwarf.
Yeah.
Now they're referred to as little people.
Yeah.
We went looking all across Canada, couldn't find one that was perfect for us.
Right.
Then we looked in the States, we still couldn't find anybody. Make a long story short, we came back to Canada. We eventually found this guy, his name was Guy Big.
Okay.
I don't think he was born with that name, but it worked. The plan was him and the guy who played Eeyore, were going to come out to our place, we're going to run through their lines for a few days, and then we could start shooting.
Right.
And at the time, the big guy, Fishka, was driving an old beat-up 1970 Volkswagen Beetle.
Oh, wow.
And that Beetle was about the same size as he was.
Yeah.
And the little guy lived in the same neighborhood, so they met each other, they drove out together. When they pulled into the driveway, Igor tried to pry himself out from behind the steering wheel, and he could just barely get out. And Guy Big had to jump down to the pavement because he couldn't reach.
Right.
The legs couldn't stretch that far.
Oh, no.
He was 31 inches tall.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, we ran through the lines for a few days. I could tell right away that the guy who played Igor was going to be fine. He was from South Africa. He had an accent. That would pass for a Frankenstein kind of accent. He had done a little bit of stand-up comedy. He was fine.
Yeah.
Guy Big, I worked with him for about 3 or 4 days, and I kept giving him more opportunities. I would say, like, "Here, Guy." First of all, I had a voice that was this big. I'm holding my fingers about half inch apart for you people in podcast land that can't see this. But he would say, I'd give him a line like, "Igor, get the door." And he would say, "Igor, get the door." And first of all, you couldn't hear him. But second of all, it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
So I said, "No, you can't do it again." So he said, "Igor, get the door." door? No. You got to try it like this, guy. And I'd go like, Igor, get the door. You know, you have to sound like a count.
Right.
Like Count Dracula. So then he would do it again. He'd say, Igor, get the door. So I worked with him for 3 or 4 days. Finally gave up. Realized the guy didn't have a funny bone in his body. Wasn't his fault.
Right.
We didn't put a call out for a comedian.
Right.
All we wanted was the smallest person in the world.
Yeah.
So we said, I said to my brother, it's not going to work. I can't make this guy a comedian. He's just, I'm not magic. He's not funny.
Yeah.
So I had to go to Hamilton and fire him. And that was a horrible scenario. I just, you know, I met with him and said, listen, you can keep the tuxedo we made for you.
Yeah.
We're
going
to pay you what we agreed to pay you. And we'll give you a part in the show. You're just not going to be the star.
Right.
So he took it like a man and jumped down off his bar stool and walked away. And then we started the search. And without, it didn't take too long for us to decide Billy might be the right guy. We hired him to be the count. And then every time we came up with another idea for another character,
right.
Billy, who had an insatiable attitude, aptitude for work, appetite
right.
for work, I should say, edit all that other junk out of there. We would say, like, for example, we're going to do a takeoff on Wolfman Jack.
Right.
So Billy would say, let me do it, man. I can do it. And he would turn around. 10 seconds later, he would turn back and he would say, I am the Wolfman. Like he would morph right into the character.
Right.
Next thing you know, we'd say, we want to do a witch, and he would turn around, he morphed into Griselda.
Oh, wow.
And one after another, so he ended up being almost everybody on the show.
God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's so cool.
Now, a little birdie we know, namely Alfonso Espinosa, tells us you and he will be working on a comic based on some of the characters.
Actually, there's lots in the offing. I just recently got the rights to the show back, and I'm talking to some people who are looking at or thinking and contemplating doing an animated series about Frankenstein, which would be great because you could do lots of stuff you couldn't do in live action.
Right.
Like I was thinking the other day, we could write a bit where the Count and Igor are sitting around in the castle, and the Count's reading the newspaper, the Grope and Mull, and he's looking at the want ads, and he sees a job for a car salesman, and he says, Igor, I think I might get a job as a car salesman. And Igor would say, but why, master? And he'd say, well, the castle's falling apart. I need some extra goulars, so I think I'll get a job. So he goes and applies for the job, and they hire him, and he's standing out in front of the car lot, and a guy comes up, and he says, I'm looking for a car. And the Count would say, well, what type of car are you looking for? And he would say, well, I don't really know. Well, a little car, a luxury car, a big car, what kind of car? So the guy said, well, you know, a big luxurious car. So the Count would turn to Igor, who, of course, was always with him, and say, Igor, bring the car around. So Igor would come back 2 seconds later dragging this huge round car. And the Count would say, no, Igor, I didn't say a round car. I said, bring the car around. Now go bring back a luxury car. And then Igor would take the round car away. He'd come back a minute later, and he'd be pulling a hearse. There, that's lots of leg room, master. And then that would be this. So you can do lots of stuff like that with animation you can't do with live action.
Exactly.
We're also talking about, I'm talking to a guy who is contemplating, I think he's going to go ahead and do a feature film about the show.
Nice.
From the time we started with the conceptual idea
right.
through to the time it went on the air. And we're doing a documentary about the show.
Oh, right.
And all the people that the show inspired will interview for the documentary, like Mike Myers and Alice Cooper and Jim Carrey and the SCTV guys, and it goes on and on and on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, and also Alfonso's super creative comic books, I think, would make a nice way to go. There are now Hilarious Sense of Frankenstein pins, lapel pins, that ghoulish Gary Pullen has created. There's a Count, and there's an Igor, and a Wolfman, and those are available by going to ghoulishgary.com, his website, and they're available there. This has been a paid political announcement, and I approve of this message. So, yeah, there's lots in the offing, and over the course of the next year and a half, I think everybody in the world will get their fill of Hilarious House of Frankenstein. And also, I think I'm going to try and make a sale in Canada and in the U.S. to get the old shows back on the air.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And that's what I think everybody really, really wants.
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I have just... It came into my head just while we were talking, but Was there ever...
I didn't even see it.
I know, right? That's how quick it was. Was there ever in any of the episodes where you were going to finally let the Count's creation come to life? Or was that always going to be the running gag to let him not?
It's interesting. There's a new member of the documentary team.
Right.
That is probably the best research guy I've ever met in my life. Matter of fact, I call him Super Sleuth. And he went through every frame of every episode, all 130 episodes.
Wow.
The plan was no.
Okay.
Bruce was never going to come back to life.
Bruce,
they could try electricity, they could try chemicals, they could try miracles,
that.
A medium, anything. Was never going to come back to life because the Count was a screw up.
Yeah.
That's why he was banished to the castle. You know, like when at the beginning of the show he would water all the flowers and they would die.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, this guy, Ed, found 2 seconds of one scene in one of the 130 episodes where Brucey actually opens his eyes.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how the hell he found it. We never planned it that way. Some prop guy must have done it when we weren't looking or something. So the answer to your question is Brucey did have a spark of life once in 130 hours of television.
That's awesome, actually.
And we owe it all to Ed.
All right, on.
That would be Ed wearing his Coca, his Dracula T-shirt.
Oh, cool.
from Frightenstein.
Right on.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Yeah. Way to go, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Let's hear it for Ed.
Yay.
There we go.
Very cool. Now, did you write
Good
Morning?
Got to give credit where credit's due.
There, thanks,
the
Ed.
The answer is no.
No, okay.
Believe it or not, there are 2 Mitch Markowitzes in the entertainment industry.
All right.
And
so they combine the 2 of them on the one page out on there.
Yeah, okay. And I don't know how much you know about the internet, but once it's out there, you can't change things.
I hear you.
It's all over the world. I'm on a million different sites, websites.
Yeah.
I can't change them. I gave up.
Yeah.
And I feel so sorry for the other Mitch Markowitz, because I'm sure people come up to him on the street and go, ooga booga. Or something from Frightenstein, and he's saying, no, that's not me. I didn't do that. But no, I didn't do Good Morning Vietnam. I didn't write MASH.
Okay.
I'm very proud of what I did do, but those aren't 2 of the things
All right.
I did.
Well, we're very happy with the work you did as well. It's
Absolutely.
Definitely a show
Thank
we grew
you.
Up with and loved, and we hope to see more of it in the future.
And your audience might want to. More recently, I co-starred in a feature film with Academy Award winner Vanessa Redgrave. The feature film is called The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee.
Okay.
And it's available. It was, maybe still is available on Netflix. It had a successful theatrical run. It was premiered at the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
Won lots of awards at 30-plus film festivals around the world. And if they're interested, they can just go to YouTube and type in The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee trailer. And the voice you hear on the official trailer is me.
Oh, right on.
Cool.
It's quite a scary movie. No blood and gore and guts. Like Edgar Allan Poe, Alan Hitchcock, that kind of supernatural kind of horror.
Nice.
Oh, very cool.
That's my kind of horror.
Yeah. Now, your audience will never know this, but it's getting close to 5 o'clock.
Yep.
And that's when we're going to cut the hilarious House of Frightenstein's 45th birthday cake.
Oh, cool.
That we're celebrating here at ArtoCon in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. So you guys are welcome to join us for a piece of cake, and maybe we could smush a piece into your recording device here, and maybe we'd make it somehow onto the big screen.
Oh, we appreciate the invitation, and
Yes. Thank
you so much for your time. It was great meeting you.
My pleasure. Great meeting you guys, and we'll see each other in movie land.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To hear more We Got the Geek, check us out at www.wegotthegeek.com and on iTunes.